Too Legit to Quit. Actually, is that MC Hammer?
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 102 of Rogue Startups. How you doing today, Craig?
Man, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. It's been a nice week. We're back from vacation, and so it's nice to be kind of back in my environment with my office and all of my stuff. I've gotten a ton of stuff done this week, so yeah, it's nice to be back. How about you?
Well, the kids are actually heading back to school this week, which is just absolutely tragic, in my opinion. You know, here it's, I mean, part of me is like, yes, the house gets quiet again. But the other part of me is like, fuck, it's August 9th. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah. This is ridiculous. And it's not just one of my kids' schools, it's like all of my kids' schools. So, I mean, for homeschooling, obviously, we start our, you know, our middle daughter whenever. But when the other two go, we start up the third daughter just to, you know, keep everybody on track and keep it consistent. So here we are this week. Everybody's going back. And yeah, it's just too damn early and too damn soon. It feels like summer 2017. We hardly knew ye.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. We're almost a full month behind. So we're like a full month behind the start of school and like 6 weeks behind the end of school. So the kids got out of school here July 7th and go back the 4th of September. So they only have about 7 weeks off, but it's a long 7 weeks. We've had a ton of fun, but it's my first time working from home at our home because last year we traveled in the summer. But it's been an adjustment, yeah.
And you guys get a fuck ton of vacation in the middle of the year, like a week for Easter and a week for fall and a month for Christmas and a random weekend for this and Bastille Day that. Well, not Bastille Day, but that's the only French holiday I can think of right now.
So. Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah, so Bastille Day is middle of July or so. But yeah, so the kids get 4 2-week breaks throughout the year. And one of those is Christmas, but yeah, so it's kind of like year-round school because they break it up by quarters. So they get a 2-week break at the end of each quarter.
So, yeah, that's not – I don't know. I kind of actually prefer that because then you could like spread your vacations out. Because right now I always feel like with the vacations and our kids, we've got like these tiny little windows, literally 4 windows in the year that we can go somewhere and we don't have to take the kids out of school to do that. So it's like brief break at there's a fall break. Christmas, which I hate traveling around Christmas, and then spring break, and then summer. So, you know, summer is also kind of a nightmare to travel, and some of the places that you want to go aren't necessarily the best to go in summer. So, yeah, I feel like that limits a little bit. If I had different splits on those vacation times, it might be a little easier for me to get to places that, you know, in the middle of winter, I'd really like to go to someplace tropical, but I don't necessarily want to do it on spring break. I'd like to do it maybe in February. So maybe that lines up with a break that you guys have. And then that would be a perfect time to get the hell out of Dodge and go someplace warm, you know?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I think it just puts less kind of stress on like the urgency of your vacations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, nice. So now that everybody's back in school, you have big plans for the business or things kind of status quo these days?
Well, the plans are still in motion, and I get exciting updates from my new developer every week at this point who's working on Recapture, and he's made a ton of progress. He already got my QA environment set up, and he's done a ton of work on the review boost feature. As soon as he's done with all of this stuff, I've got a list of other things that I can have him start plowing through about just, you know, pricing behavior that I want to have happen on the site. So like, for example, if somebody exceeds their email quota, I want them to automatically bump up to the next plan, but I want to warn them about it. So that, I mean, there's behavior you have to build into the SaaS to do that. It doesn't exist today, but stuff like that, I'd like to get in there, and I'm excited that he's like firing in all cylinders and making stuff happen. So that's pretty cool. The plugins, you know, we're just kind of humming along with that. The price increase has been amazingly smooth, I have to say. Last month's revenue turned out to be better than expected. I think I talked about this a little bit on the last podcast, but it, you know, I didn't have a ton of people complaining and I didn't see a massive drop in sales and things are still kind of humming along right now. So I'm like, all right, this pricing, I think I did the pricing really well this time. It seems like I pushed all the right buttons and flipped all the right levers and picked up the right bins of trash. And everybody seems to be generally happy with it so far. I haven't had a lot of complaints, so I'm happy with where that ended up.
Nice. Now, I know you were really sort of thoughtful and methodical about how you approached it and communicated with your customers. So then it just kind of goes to show you that a little bit of preparation and a lot of communication up front that makes pulling off something like that a lot easier. I'm sure if you would have just winged it and changed the price on the fly, kind of like Pippin did, you'd see a little more backlash. So I think that you were very savvy to do it like you did.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I just saw this on Twitter the other day. I guess Groove may have announced their pricing, but they must not have announced it in a way that everybody heard it, because just like Help Scout had raised their prices, Groove has now raised their prices. And I saw some people complaining about it going, hey, I didn't hear about this. What the hell, man? And it's like a seven – it's not even that. It's like a $5 a month increase. No, it's seven. Yeah, $7 a month, and people are like blowing a lid over it here. But it, you know, again, it's all about communication and all about setting expectations. And I've not seen that blowback with Help Scout because Nick Francis put out that really awesome email that I totally copied. So if anybody wants a template of that email, by the way, I've saved it. I am more than happy to provide it. So just send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. I'll be happy to forward it to you because this was sheer genius. The way that he framed everything, the way he laid it out, it was just very detailed, very methodical, and said, I'm really sorry about this. If you have any questions or concerns, we're happy to answer them here. This is why we went through the whole thing, made it so that it was easy for people to scan the email and still get the content. But at the same time, if you're a detail-oriented person, like, it's just such an amazing email. Like, you know, I don't really say that about a lot of email, even though I'm an email marketing guy now. That was one of the emails that really stood out in my mind, and that's why I copied it so heavily. And it clearly paid off for Business Directory plugin because I've not had a lot of blowback, really any blowback from the price increase as a result of that. So, happy.
Nice.
How about you, man?
Yeah, man, things are good. We launched a major update to the plugin. So version 1.17 is out in the wild for Seriously Simple Podcasting. And we released another update yesterday, a minor release. So our major kind of problems that we were having are all fixed now. I'm sure there will be other ones that pop up. But, you know, from the launch...
You're good.
Yeah, right. We're done. We're done. I tell my developer to go on vacation for 2 months. No. From the launch, we had a couple of things that were not quite right. And it really took us a couple of months just because I want to keep the business cash flow neutral at least, or positive right now. And my developer just has so much time that he can devote to our project because he's not full-time. He's a freelancer. And so we finally got this last one out last week, another little update this week, to where at this point I feel really confident that like anyone can walk in the door, plug it in, and it works perfectly in almost any situation, which in the WordPress world is really something. I mean, just in the last week, our support queue has dried up almost entirely. I should knock on wood. I shouldn't even be saying this, but we've done a lot of kind of thoughtful work, like I was just saying. Like, we've done a lot of thoughtful work about attacking the right things and kind of making the tool as robust as possible so that anyone who signs up can get it implemented on their site, start uploading files and publishing and migrating over really easily. So that's cool. So that means now I have to start marketing, which is I haven't really done a lot of it yet, but I'm looking at doing a couple of things. I kicked off my first Facebook ads yesterday. I actually had my first conversion today. I'm just spending a little bit of money. So my first conversion on like a $7 ad spend is pretty good. So right now.
So how's your mom's account doing?
What's that?
How's your mom's account doing?
I thought it might have been you because I told you about my Facebook ads.
No, you said don't click on your ads. That's I'm like, right. Oh, damn it. It's all right. I won't. Even though I'm tempted. Yeah.
Oh, man. So, you know, I don't we're spending $5 a day right now, but I think it's the kind of thing where we can get people in the door, have them sign up for a trial. Our conversion rate is good. I'm sure it'll go down with this, but I really want to take the time and be kind of conservative about it, but I really want to figure out Facebook ads. I think it's the easiest way to scale, as opposed to chasing a bunch of other marketing channels. I think Facebook ads, and the other thing we're going to look at doing is podcast advertising. And it just fits in really well with our audience. They're pretty techy and they're podcast listeners. So tech-related podcasts should do well for us, and we're looking at our first opportunity there maybe next month. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's fun to dabble in some new, you know, marketing techniques and aspects. I didn't do any of this with Podcast Motor really, other than for kind of email list building, but directly to try and convert somebody, which with the kind of SaaS that I have, people should be able to convert pretty easily. There's not like this huge decision process that they have to go through like Podcast Motor. So.
Right, right. Yeah, they're very different products. And you have a very different profit margin and LTV on them. So you can definitely spend different kinds of money there to acquire more customers.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, talking about HelpScout and Groove, I think an interesting conversation we should have, and it's probably another month or so out, is the kind of tools that we use and tools that maybe I used at the beginning that we're changing to different tools. In the future, and workflow with managing production and development environments and things like that. I find myself getting more into the tools of managing the team and the product. So I'd be interested to hear kind of some of your thoughts on what you inherited and what you like about it and don't like about it. And I think the audience might appreciate kind of two different perspectives on that. So we'll put that in our file box maybe.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good one. What to do when you outgrow your tools or you inherit some tools that you don't like, and what do you do about that? So, yeah, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody ought to do a show on that.
We should. Yeah. Oh, but, you know, part of it, actually, I got thinking from Derek Reimer's talk, part of our 100th episode. He had some really insightful stuff he talked about, which is not surprising. But I've been reading some of his blog. So scalingsaas.com is Derek's kind of technical blog where he talks about his experiences with Drip.
Yep.
And Dave, in particular, there's an article on there about their billing engine that you probably should have your developer look at, because they talk about how they developed their billing engine, because Drip is very complicated in how they bill. Like if you go over a certain number of subscribers, then you get automatically bumped up and then bumped down if you go back down under a certain number of subscribers. So yeah, it's pretty complicated, and he talks through how and why they built it like they did.
I have actually had a personal conversation with Derek specifically about that when I was ramping up Support Vine, and I was asking him how they did their billing and how they integrated with Stripe, and he's like, yeah, the whole freaking thing's custom. And I was like, what? And then he explained to me like all of this complicated billing behavior that they had that you just couldn't do with the standard Stripe API. Like there was no way to just bump things up and bump them down based on conditionals. And this was several years ago, and I don't think it's changed radically since then. And even like as a result of their decision, like they can't integrate with most of the Stripe-based tools out there. So they can never use Bare Metrics, for example.
Mm.
Yeah, so they've got to roll their own analytics now and stuff like that. But yeah, I definitely if you're not really reading scalingsaas.com, you should definitely check out Derek's blog. He's got some great stuff about behind the scenes, nitty gritty stuff of what they've had to do in Drip, and to a lesser extent Hittail in order to make stuff work, because he was working on that as well. But yeah, it's some pretty crazy things that they had to do to make Drip work, and they've done some amazing stuff as a result of that. So it's a definite trade off. How much do you want to be able to control in your billing system versus how much do you just want to let somebody else deal with that crap for you and be, you know, more integratable? So yeah, it's a trade-off, definitely a trade-off.
Yeah. It sort of struck a chord with me, because I know that like the point he made in his contribution to our 100th episode was like, make smart decisions about your technology and your stack so that you minimize that technical debt that you're incurring. And I know they're a very complicated tool, but it seems like maybe he learned that lesson a bit of the hard way, because they have some things that aren't openly compatible and everything. So yeah, it was just interesting that even a successful tool like that and a savvy developer like him seems like he maybe ran into some of that trouble himself.
Yeah, we actually had sort of a side discussion after that in the episode about like why they went with something that was kind of unsexy for Drip. Like they built the whole thing on Rails. And that was not Rob's initial decision on that. He was kind of like, I don't know, you know, we don't know, you know, I don't know Rails. And so if I needed to jump in and help, I can't really do it and stuff like that. And Derek's like, yeah, but I'm really good at that. Like, so that was actually reducing a risk by using an older, proven, known technology. It was boring, but boring is great when you're building something on it because you know it's going to be reliable. It was mm-hmm. the reason I actually started with Java for Support Vine, because I knew that it was dead reliable for enterprise stuff. It was not sexy. It was not, you know, the best, the hottest, newest thing. I actually had a hard time finding developers for it as a result, but it was something that I knew and I could go in there and dig stuff. But, you know, ultimately that that decision was based more about the stability of the platform than anything. So anyway,
yeah.
Side note there. Yeah. Derek's a great guy. If you ever get a chance to talk to him in person, I highly recommend it.
Yep. And very approachable. So, yep. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of platforms, I think our discussion this week is interesting. So there was a development in the WordPress world this week that I think could push some people's buttons maybe the wrong way. But, you know, looking at Automattic, the parent company of WordPress.com, getting into the managed hosting space for WordPress and some other crazy stuff.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with everything that sort of has been going down in the WordPress space, let me give you a little bit of backstory here. So Automattic, run by Matt Mullenweg, has always sort of been like the benevolent dictator of this massive organization that basically runs an entire open source platform that they're freely giving away to run 26% of the internet. And for a lot of people that were community oriented and behind the GPL and other stuff like that, they were, you know, really cheering this whole thing on for a long time, massive champions. And then WordPress started behaving less, I don't know, how do I want to put this that's politically correct here?
Philanthropic.
They were less philanthropic. Thank you. That's a great way to put it. It became clear over time that WordPress was moving more towards a commercialization of their own space, while at the same time like punishing, and I really want to use the word punishing here, because they have actively gone out of their way to keep commercialization out of the WordPress.org repository and to prevent anybody from directly monetizing their plugins inside of the repository itself. You can do it indirectly, which is what I do with Business Directory plugins. So I can have a bunch of links to an outside site. I can have upgrades, but I can't sell a paid plugin in WordPress.org. That's been strictly prohibited for years. And anybody who's tried to do anything along those lines usually gets slapped down pretty hard, because there's been this culture of no commercialization, no commercialization, no money for you. And now, all of a sudden, in the last 12 months, we've seen a substantial shift in that. So a little bit before this, Automattic acquired WooThemes, which was a very large company that was one of the original large commercial theme companies. And these guys did a bunch of great stuff, and I was recommending them for tons of years because of Adi Pinar's talk from MicroConf. He's a great guy, cool to hang out with. He actually left the company shortly after that. And they, in addition to WooThemes, there was also WooCommerce. And eventually, after the acquisition of WooThemes, they ended up taking over or buying WooCommerce as well. And at the time, they were sort of billing this whole thing as, well, you know, this is good for the ecosystem, and we're just trying to enrich the community and provide more options. while, you know, all of us that are sitting back here doing commercial WordPress development for plugins and themes are like, this looks sure as hell like an unfair advantage to me, because you've got a distribution channel that none of us else can tap.
Yeah.
In fact, you've never let us tap that. Any attempt to tap that, we've gotten slapped. And so it's gotten more pointed in the last 12 months where, for example, Jetpack started creating like a theme marketplace. So within WordPress, Jetpack is now like default installed on a lot of hosts. And if it's not default installed, it's sure as hell recommended on the main page of when you go to WordPress plugins there and you've got nothing to install and you go to add new. It's like in the top four right there.
All of the automatic plugins are.
All of the automatic stuff. BBPress, Jetpack, ThemeCheck.
WP Supercache.
WP Supercache.
Yeah,
all of these things are like – all of their stuff is recommended at the top. Well, that's been rubbing people wrong for a long time, you know, for those of us that are in the commercial development space of WordPress. And now this week, all of a sudden, they're like, oh, hey, look, we're – now officially releasing third-party themes and plugins into our WordPress.com hosting. And it's sort of like, well, wait a minute here. So you guys are now managed WordPress hosts just like Bluehost and GoDaddy and SiteGround and everybody else. But you have a completely and totally unfair advantage compared to anybody else. So if I was one of those hosts this week, A, I'd be super pissed off. And B, I would be like on the phone – talking to Matt saying, what the actual fuck are you doing here? Because this looks to me like very much the opposite of all the stuff you've been talking about for the past decade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, this brings to mind, I don't know if he's written an article about it or not, but Josh Pigford had kind of a tweet storm last week about Stripe announcing kind of built-in analytics into Stripe, which would make kind of bare metrics – I'm going to say obsolete, but from the surface, kind of make them obsolete. And what he said is, you know, we provide a different solution than what Stripe is going to offer in their analytics. And that's kind of how I, if I was Jason Cohen, right, so WP Engine, I would say, sure, you can host at WordPress.com for your kind of self-managed or self-hosted WordPress site, but it's not the same experience that you'll get at WP Engine or at Pagely or at Flywheel or whatever. That's not really the point, but I think that at this point, those big established premium managed hosts should have enough differentiation with their products to where people coming in would say, you know, okay, whatever the WordPress.com solution is looks like this, but ours is different and better because it looks like that. But I think the bigger thing is the kind of artificial manipulation of the market that WordPress.com is introducing. And I think it's something we haven't seen in any other, I'll call it an ecosystem or a marketplace. As you think about like the Apple marketplace and the App Store, you don't see a lot of paid Apple apps in the App Store. I don't think you see any. And you sure as shit don't see them.
There's none.
Yeah, I mean, you sure as shit don't see them actively promoting them. I think Apple was one of the first to say, like, we're going to build the house, and you guys come in and sell your shit, and we'll take a cut of it. And I think WordPress is taking a different approach here, for better or worse. But, yeah, it's definitely a big change.
Yeah, so Tony Perez, of formerly of Sucuri, who's now with GoDaddy, wrote a whole long article about this, and it's some great stuff. We'll put it in the show notes. But the thing that I really liked about this article here was that, you know, he sort of laid out all of the points that I just talked about. But the thing that I think is most most scary is the fact that, you know, WordPress.com and Automattic have set up all of these partnerships out in the ecosystem. And now all of a sudden they're pushing Jetpack and they're pushing their managed hosting. So what, you know, this puts them on real shaky ground with a lot of these partners where they're actively partnering, for example, with Bluehost or Dreamhost, or, and now all of a sudden they're stepping straight on their business. I mean, if you're a partner of one of these guys, what are you thinking at this point? Can you even like continue to trust WordPress.com anymore? Because one day they're your friend, the next day they're taking business away from you, and not just a little, but a lot, because of their distribution channel. I mean, they have a massively unfair distribution channel just by creating their WordPress installs and what they can show and what they're willing to put in there and what they're not gives them that massive unfair advantage.
So at this point, though, WordPress.com and Automattic don't have, let's say, direct or authoritative input on what's included in the WordPress that we use. We're like self-hosted WordPress, right?
Yes and no. So, you know, there are distinct roles about who is in charge for each particular component. And when you go through releases, there's a whole team that deals with these things specifically. But let's be absolutely clear about this. The vast majority of those who have commit authority or that have managerial authority, shall I say, on the decisions of these committees are Automattic employees, including Matt Mullenweg. Mm. So to say that there is some sort of separation between these two organizations or there's some sort of comfortable professional distance is an outright, you know, outright lie. I mean, these guys have a very – very strong influence on where WordPress goes. Like, for example, the WordPress command line interface and the REST API, both of those things Matt was fighting against tooth and nail for a long time, and only recently have they started to creep into things and become part of core, mostly because of Matt. So that, you know, you can't tell me that Automattic has this professional distance here when he's the head of Automattic and sort of the benevolent dictator, as he's referred to, of WordPress. So
yeah, I know he announced at WordCamp Europe that he's going to be heading up the development team or the managing the product for the next year or two, I think, for WordPress.org, like for the WordPress product.
Yeah. Yeah. So
which is even sort of, yeah, let's say worse or whatever, you know, but I mean more, much more him having direct influence on what is put in or not put into the product that we use.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to bash on Matt here because, I mean, Matt has done a tremendous service to the WordPress community and the WordPress as a platform for years. I mean, you don't get to run 26% of the internet because you totally fucked up along the way. You know, they've made some missteps and they've done some things that, you know, people don't agree with. But the base truth is that WordPress now powers a huge chunk of the internet. And the reason for that is the work that's been done all of these years and building it up to where it is today, in a large part due to Matt's leadership in that department. But, you know, to say that all of a sudden, hey, we're going to start doing all these things that are looking kind of commercial, and oh, by the way, we're still not really a commercial thing, it just feels a little disingenuous, especially when you're one of the commercial guys in WordPress trying to make a living out of this and have these guys come in as the 800-pound gorilla and start stepping on everybody here as they're going through and just pounding along their path, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at most other marketplaces, there's a clear set of rules and a clear sort of expectation or framework for profit and profitability for third partners, like Apple, App Store, Magento, I'm sure probably operates like WordPress, where it's mostly all free in the core and then has a paid add-on ability outside. Salesforce, the other one I think about, where they have like actively commercialized partners and add-ons. So from the beginning, Salesforce has been like a come and play on our playground and make money here because it'll make everyone better kind of attitude. And I don't know, maybe WordPress has been a little too ambiguous as to kind of where it stands and what the rules and expectations are.
Well, they've had that ambiguity for years between WordPress.com and WordPress.org, and trying to explain that to most people these days just gives everybody a headache in the end.
Yeah.
And there's still no clear story or branding or anything around that. You know, you would think that at some point they want to try to fix that, but it is what it is at the moment. So, Yeah, there's a one other thing I wanted to throw in here is that Chris Lema, noted WordPress guy, awesome dude in general, had said this in one of the comments of Tony Perez's blog, and that was, while not impossible, we rarely see manufacturers get into the same business as their distributors or retail partners because it creates a lot of unwanted, unplanned for, and unintended secondary consequences. And then he continues and says, I'm sure that Automattic didn't go into this lightly, and I'm sure that they'll not position it as becoming a host, but rather relaxing the dynamics for their existing customers. Still, you've got to sit back and wonder, you know, if you're one of the inexpensive hosts, what's going on here? Did WordPress just trample all over your business? You know, if you're one of the theme guys, is Jetpack basically going to render places like ThemeForest irrelevant? You know, is that not going to be the go-to destination anymore? And are they going to come up with something for plugins that's like the equivalent of Code Canyon, for example, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All of this is certainly possible with WordPress.org and with Jetpack in particular. So you never know. You know, it's been a looming threat for a long time, but it just seems like this week they've made a very deliberate move that everybody's going to spend a lot of time diagnosing and dissecting here.
Yeah, I mean, I think for all of us who play in someone else's sandbox to an extent, so us and WordPress or people that have Apple apps or integrations with any major player that makes your tool kind of dependent on them, I think the lesson is that, you know, so differentiate yourself from whatever product that platform could put out. And as much as possible, kind of own your space and own your ability to be a business. I mean, you see some of these things like Optin Monster started as a WordPress plugin and now is a standalone app that also integrates with WordPress. But I mean, as we look at taking seriously some old podcasting, you know, in the next year, it definitely started as a WordPress plugin. Now it's a WordPress plugin plus a hosting platform. And I think in the future it will be hosting platform with a WordPress plugin. So we're very conscious of not hanging all of our hats on the WordPress, you know, hook, because one, it limits your market a little bit. Two, it's a giant risk for your business. And as much as you can kind of maintain the kind of theme and the feel of what you're doing, but also mitigate the risk of the downside risk of the platform that you're on changing the rules, you'll come out better in the end, I think. And it's a fine line to walk, for sure.
Yep. So what are your thoughts on playing nicely in somebody else's sandbox? Why don't you send us your thoughts to podcast@roguestartups.com or throw something down in the comments and let us know what you think.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.